Oh yes, ladies and gentlemen, can you hear my plea for a little bit of unity out there? It's time to stick together and be very nice people for a change. You know, isn't that what it's supposed to all be about? Be some very nice cats out there and join each other and collaborate and make some stuff happen and criticize the living Shiite Muslim out of the government. Because after all, there's nobody that's ripping more Shiite off us than the government. My very special guests joining us straight off the bat today for a short couple of segments are James Burns and Jeff from Freedom Files. Welcome, guys.
Howdy.
Thanks, Will, Vinny. How's it going?
A Freudian slip there. What we wanted to talk about was the 2012 election and, Barack H. O'Barry, he's campaigning on the platform of change you can beg for, and the Republicans want to get their mitts onto the reins of power again, specifically Mitt Romney. And of course, there's a Freedom candidate, and in fact, you've just told me on air that there's in fact two candidates that are like libertarian and kind of stuff. Who's the other guy other than Ron Paul?
Gary Johnson, he's a former governor. He's anti-drug war, very libertarian-leaning, a lot lesser known, obviously, than Ron Paul. And push comes to shove, I'm going to support Ron Paul. But Gary Johnson's still a really nice guy. And, you know, it's good that you're having more libertarian-leaning Republicans running. And I think the more the merrier. I mean, more libertarian Republicans running for president equals less neocon-leaning Republicans. And I really don't care for the two-party puppet show altogether. I'm more about the supporting the individual over the party.
Well, let's talk about the individuals then. Who is this Gary Johnson guy? He was governor. Governor of what?
I believe it was New Mexico. He served for a couple terms. He was actually very popular with the entire state. He was popular with Republicans. He was popular with Democrats. And he did a lot of good stuff while he was governor. And, I mean, he's a good guy. I mean, he did a decent job. I mean, like most of these politicians, the typical governors that get in, they talk a good talk, and then they do jack squat for their constituents. So he does have a very good track record as governor. It's just
Another Jesse Ventura.
Yeah. I mean, but at the same time, I mean, he just doesn't have the same name recognition that Ron Paul has been developing for the past couple of years. But I mean, he's on his way.
Well, let's generate a name for him then, you know. I mean, as members of the media, I think it's our responsibility to get the names out of people that other ones should pay attention to. And quite frankly, I think O'Barry and Mitt Romney and all those other wealthy, rich, you-know-whats don't really give an F about us, as George Carlin said. So I think let's give a voice and a platform to those who really want to be, or really should be, in the limelight. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. My very special guests are the Freedom Files crew at freedomfiles.us. And we'll be right back. Jamming a big frickin' monkey wrench into the gears of the New World Order machine. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show. The lighter side of genocide. Broadcasting live from the fabulous fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, and the fabulous fluoride fortress in the South Pacific. Slave country. And my very special guests today are people from the former USSR. Oh, sorry, the USSA. It's the Freedom Files boys, James Burns and Jeff. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you, Vinny.
Hey, well, the 2012 election, bro, I'm really starting to get kind of freaked out about it. You know, do you get the same sensation, James, that when a local election or something along that line is coming up, your stress level also goes up?
I think since I've woken up to the two-party puppet show, I've become a lot more apathetic because I've come to realize that for the most part, it's just a bunch of BS, Vinny. And the sad reality is most of the time when it comes to a local, a state, or federal election, I really don't have much faith in most of the candidates are running, whether or not they're Republican, Democrat, or any other party. But Ron Paul is someone that for the past four years now has been a little bit different, in my opinion. He basically cured my apathy because up until that point, summer 2007, I had basically given up on it all. You know, I was awake to everything going on, but at the same time, I really felt like that nobody wanted any real change. Nobody was going to follow the Constitution or Bill of Rights. And all of a sudden, on Jon Stewart's show, The Daily Show, he had this young 70-year-old man on, this guy running for president, and he was talking about stuff. I'm like, hey, where's this guy been all my life? And you know, from there on, you know, I've been a proud Ron Paul supporter.
Yeah, yeah. And what do you make of Cynthia McKinney?
I like her. I mean, I don't agree with all of her points of view on everything, but I believe she's honest. I believe that her heart's in the right place. And I think that Cynthia McKinney, Ron Paul, Ralph Nader, and Dennis Kucinich represent the need for Americans and for everybody around the world to stop infighting and stop mudslinging and focus on the things we have in common and go from there instead of all this demonization that we get from the false left and false right.
Well, I'm drawing a parallel here between America and New Zealand here, because we've got this politician called Hone Hariwera. He's part of the Māori Party. And basically what's happening now is that him, some excerpts from the Green Party, people have been in Parliament before, are all starting to join forces and form this quote-unquote new left party, right? And so the list of people that you just gave us there, all those people that represent constitutionality or something, along those lines, I think maybe in the future we'll see them form a coalition, and they'll run as the first third party in the United States, and they'll be so popular because their entire platform of their party will only be that one, and with the drawing and support of all their former campaigns for the Democrats and the Republicans, and of course Ralph Nader, long-standing. This is something that I believe is going to shape the face of politics, and this is going to happen simultaneously worldwide. I'm also going to wager, because it's already happened in the UK, hasn't it? And it's now starting to happen here in New Zealand, and I think before long it'll happen in the United States. You know, this is the thing about politics that does frustrate me, James, is that I know that there's an agenda at play, and by watching the election coverage, I find out what it is.
Yeah, but at the same time, Vinny, it is something that Jeff and I were talking about earlier, is that, you know, George Washington, in his farewell address, he warned about political parties. And I think we do need to seriously focus more on individuals rather than political parties, be it Republican, Democrat, any other party out there, no matter what country you're in, or whether they're new parties. I mean, it's a good thing that there are new parties popping up, like what's happening in New Zealand and what's happening throughout the rest of the world. But eventually, even third parties get co-opted and taken over and corrupted.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. And what I'm talking about here is that third parties we've got already, and they have definitely been taken over and corrupted.
Yeah, and that's very true. And that's one reason why I really don't consider myself a member of the Libertarian Party anymore. I mean, I have my viewpoint is libertarian/constitutional, and I consider myself, I guess, a little L libertarian. But after the whole fiasco with Bob Barr, you know, I supported him when he got the nominee, but then I started realizing, you know, what a scumbag he was and all the stuff he was doing while he was running for president back in 2008. you know, that kind of jaded me and made me realize that the Libertarian Party, as well as other third parties, are just as susceptible to being taken over as the two big parties in our country.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jeff, what do you think?
Not much. I'm pretty much here just for the comic relief on the show.
Yeah, that's Jeff. He's very anti-party.
Yeah, I'm very anti-party. My belief, if we get rid of all the parties, you'd pretty much force people to look at the person. Yeah, when you start joining people together with a supposed like mind, you end up with a bunch of fighting because nobody's going to be 100%. You know, just because you're libertarian doesn't mean that everybody else in your party is going to agree with you. And, you know, same with every other party. It becomes kind of pointless to even join together in these parties because, you know.
Well, it wipes away the very point of protecting individual liberties by grouping people together.
Exactly.
Well, see, there's an interesting point, isn't it? That's how they've forced all our politicians and people who want to serve their country into serving something that wipes away individual liberty. Because in order to represent your country, you have to be part of an organization that wipes away your individual liberty.
That's true. That's very true.
Hey, as above, so below. That's what we've got. Yeah. I think you're right, Jeff. We should get rid of frickin' parties.
Get rid of every one of them. I think it forces people to look at the person. And it prevents a lot of this infighting because, you know, you won't have so many people assuming that this guy has to do it the way he says he's going to do it because he's got a D next to his name. Yeah.
Oh, but then again, of course, they're all just so corrupt with lobbyists that all of these individuals
that's the second
just
thing
support
that's gotta go.
God. All right. Hey. Well, so there's two very interesting things that would make an election, I think, probably a bit more fair and representative, is if you wiped away the existence of parties and only individuals could run as independents. And what was the other one? Oh, yes. Remove the potential of lobbying.
I think all the citizens need to go in there and just do a big old citizen's arrest. Get rid of every one of those lobbyists because the lawmakers aren't going to get rid of them.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's
apparently,
take a citizen's arrest.
Yeah. And apparently you can buy those plastic tag handcuffs for like $2.95 down at Walmart, you know, for a pack of 100. I mean, my goodness sake. That would be real great if we could all just march in there and arrest them with stuff we bought at Walmart.
Well, I think that's a bit extreme, guys, but I think that we could focus on voting for individuals that are anti-lobbyists.
Yeah.
That would go in, making it illegal to have these middlemen for the corporatist elite who fill the coffers and war chests of our elected officials, thereby corrupting them and forcing them to be the puppets of the higher powers.
Yeah. But if they are corrupt puppets of the higher powers, shouldn't we then arrest them and try them by a jury of their peers and convict them?
I believe that, but at the same time, there is a process we have to take, though. We can't just... Yeah. There's a danger that we could go all French Revolution.
Well, yeah, no, that would go that far. That's why
we don't want to do that kind of stuff. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, we don't want to just straight up kill them or something or give them a kangaroo court. I mean, I think at this point in time where our countries are just getting so majorly effed over by these criminal banksters and their lackeys in the government, that I think we just need to just put everything on hold for a moment and just say, all right, man, we really need to just suspend all your power and everything like that. I mean, all the civil servants and police and everything like that, they don't need a politician to tell them what to do. There's already laws and mechanisms in place. The country could just run as normal, except we just shut down Congress and get rid of all the lobbyists and have a quick investigation of what everybody else is doing, you know, quick few questions, and if there's anything suspicious or financial links to these people and possibly laws they've amended and sponsored by corporations, hey, then they're going to have to go to trial for selling out America. And the same goes for any New Zealand parliamentarian. And I think that's a fair way to do it, and it prevents a lot of disruption, and everybody wins. You get a government free of criminals and free of lobbyists. And incidentally, the two are connected.
but then we also have to go another step further. Not only do we have to abolish the political parties and the lobbyists, but we also have to, you know, bring currencies back under the treasuries of governments and do away with central banking. And then there's another problem that your country, Australia, Jamaica, Canada, and the UK have is the monarchy. You have to, you know, get them out of your countries as well, because like it or not, you guys still have a governor general, a, you know, viceroy, who represents the queen, the sovereign. And as long as she still has that authority, you guys, no matter what you do, she can always come in with her governor general and abolish your parliament, like she's done with Canada several times.
Like she's the friggin' viceroy of the droid fleet or something like that. Force a blockade on your planet. Hey, well, you know, I think the world is modeled on after a Star Wars movie, or rather, is the Star Wars movie modeled after the world? You know, there is a frickin' evil emperor. There is a frickin' evil empire. There are frickin' stormtroopers.
Yeah.
You know?
That's very true. I mean, a lot of times fiction reflects fact. And that's kind of the way I see the prequels. I mean, a lot of people say, well, the prequels aren't as good as the original three, and I agree with that. But at the same time, when you put the prequels in context with the world we're living in, the reality that republics do fall, that they a lot of times do get corrupt from within, and you have an emperor or Julius Caesar rise or a dictator and has the ability to abolish freedom and liberty and install an empire, it happens. I mean, it's history repeating itself, and that's what is transpiring right before our very eyes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's nothing terribly unique about the timing of the release of Star Wars or the plot or anything, because it's not exactly an original story when you really think about it. All the characters are the same. They play the same roles. You know, it's basically the same story over and over with little details mixed up.
Yeah. And the similarities between the other three Star Wars films, you can take all the way back to the Knights of Camelot and the story of King Arthur and his war with Mordred, you know, his bastard son. I mean, that's what happens. These stories are, you know, constantly told and retold over again, much like the Messiah story that's in several cultures. I mean, it's just a constant retelling that continues to be revamped, rebooted, remade.
Yeah, what they call the New World Order is just the Old World Order trying to dress it up, as Webster Tarpley says.
That's very true.
Yeah, it's like an 80-year-old injecting botulism toxin into their cheeks.
Yeah, it's like Nancy Pelosi trying to pass off as like a 30, 40-year-old when she's actually 70.
she's 70?
She's about either she's 69 or 70 now, but she's an old bat.
She looks really crazy, quite frankly, you know? She looks like a cross between Kathy Bates and Mick Jagger.
Hey, there's no need to insult Kathy Bates and Mick Jagger, Vinny.
You know, everything she said, you know, it's like what she's saying next, that was probably another lot of Pelosi.
Yeah. I know, it's just another lame Speaker of the House. Of course, we've had a nice long line of them. Pelosi, Hastert, let's see, Gingrich, now he's running for president. Boehner, sucks pretty bad.
There's something that people think about America, bro, is that you got so much choice, but all your choices are bad.
Yeah.
That's just another one crook after the other.
Yeah. I have 500 crooks for you to elect. Really? Is there a single honest one among them? Maybe. Yeah. But I don't think so. You know, oh, mate, we're playing with a stacked deck. It's a rigged game. And, hey, it's a craps table in a mafioso basement. All right? Nobody else gets to play at the table. And if you do get to play at the table, you might wind up getting shot.
Well, it's just like the same mindset that people have going to Vegas to make it big at the casinos. They think that they're going to go play the slots or play blackjack, and they're going to, you know, come back big. But the rule in casinos is the house always wins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And what do you do against a system that is rigged? And I say, because it's rigged anyway, we should cheat.
Huh?
Yeah. Why don't we just pull off the biggest election fraud of all time or something like that? And then
get out of that.
Yeah. Just elect somebody like a donkey.
Donkey.
An actual donkey. Like and rig the election so that the donkey wins. And incidentally, incidentally, it's Republican, and the and the vote was split between an actual elephant.
Yeah. And while at the same time, the Catholics should have a bunny rabbit as their pope.
There you go.
Hey, see, there we go. Now we're talking. We could literally, have a fake election called the Animal Farm election.
Yeah, there you go.
Where some creatures are more equal than others. It'd be a great ode to George Orwell.
But I think the problem, Vinny, there is when you're going to fight fire with fire, and you do that, then you bring yourselves down to their level. And when that happens, does it really make us any better than those that we fight against?
Oh, we don't have to do it for real, though. We can just.
I know you're just talking hypotheticals.
No. I'm talking about just doing it as a prank. You know, like for example, you know how the Yes Men they printed a whole huge bunch of papers with all the news that people would want to see. Like for example, all U.S. troops are now pulling out of Iraq. The EPA has ruled all these poisons and such to be illegal, and the president steps down in disgrace as he is impeached. And, you know, all that good news that you wish you'd looked up and seen in the morning, and then all of a sudden the buzz was going around New York and they had a fake website up and all of that kind of stuff. And you had little disclosure statements, you know, just saying this is actually a fake website. And it's
and the date says April 1st.
Yeah. You know, see, there's innumerable ways that we can basically make fun of the system and expose it at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think what we've got here is we've got a small group of determined individuals. I think this is a worldwide movement now, you know, and I think everybody in every country is capable of doing this. And you don't need a lot of people. You just need a few key talented people who can, you know, get the websites done and all of that kind of jazz, man. It would be freaking awesome. But anyway, I'm a dreamer. I can dream if I want to. Even if they wind up getting smashed by the New World Order into smithereens, much like the hopes of many people in the United States and New Zealand and pretty much every country around the world, that the next time they go to vote, the system might change for the better. My very special guests have been James Burns and Jeff from freedomfiles.us, and we'll be right back. Down, ladies and gentlemen, in the Japan sense of the world. That's right, Japan is going down, and it's actually a very serious situation. I shouldn't speak ill of the dead, or irradiated for that matter. There's quite a few of them now. And they're joined by my very good friend and other radio show host on AFR, James Burns from Freedom Files. Welcome back, mate.
Thanks.
Hey, where are we heading with this 2012 election? Who do you think is actually going to win, but who do you want to win?
Okay, well, we'll just be honest here. Who I think is probably going to win is most likely Obama. I think he's probably going to get reelected. But who I'd like to win would be Ron Paul. But, I mean, though it's a small glimmer of hope that he'll get the nominee and win the election, I still have hope. So, but I think the reality of the situation is we're going to see Obama reelected as president come up in November 2012. But at the same time, you have to ask yourself, what's worse, Obama being reelected or one of these neocons like Huckabee, Romney, Gingrich, Bachman, Palin, or Chump getting the election?
Did you know that Trump is a birther?
Yeah, but I think a lot of that is just publicity, you know, and I think he has no real intention of running for office. I think he's just trying to boost up the ratings for his forthcoming new season of Celebrity Apprentice.
No. I don't think so. Trump likes to build on stuff. You know what he's going to do? He's going to make a TV show about his election campaign.
I don't know. I don't think the guy's serious. I don't think he's actually going to run for office.
I think he's got the backing, the personal finance to do it.
Well,
you only need $500 million. That's how much Barack H. O'Barry got from corporate banks. And
yeah, but who's going to give Trump that money though? Is it going to come out of his pocket? Because if it's going to come out of his
probably.
Pocket. Well, Vinny, if it's going to come out of his pocket, most billionaires are not going to waste that much money on an election campaign. I mean, he's not a billionaire for nothing.
Oh, well,
learned how to squeeze two pennies together.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, you can't just come out of absolutely nowhere as a governor from Arkansas or from Chicago and then instantly become president or a senator. Oh, wait, you can. It's just all a question of financing. If Trump actually really wants to do it and some of the banks get in with him, then heck yeah, he could be president. Anybody could be president. Yeah. It's like a Russian roulette out there. Whichever sucker on the system's teat wants to be president enough to screw over the Americans more than anyone else, he'll get the job. If he's talented enough to play the public like a fiddle, they'll finance him, and they'll get exactly what they want again.
Yeah, I mean, so, I just can't see him actually running, because I think all this is just a big giant publicity stunt on his behalf just to get out there. Get his name out there in the mainstream media. And then once his new show comes back on in a few months, I don't know when I'm not really a reality TV junkie, so I don't really care about that. But I think it's all about boosting his ratings.
Well, what if it's like part of conditioning or something? Like they're trying to get people used to the idea of a TV star or movie star becoming the president. And I think it might be like a little jab in the public's ribs to like wonder if we've had a president who's like an illegal immigrant, a president who's like been an actor or something like that, then I reckon we'll probably have Arnold Schwarzenegger as one of the next presidents of the United States.
Yeah. Going with the infamous Demolition Man prediction, are we?
Oh, my goodness.
That's what they predicted in that movie, that he'd be president. But anyways, you're right about the reality of the situation when it comes to our culture. It's been coerced into this false celebrity worship culture. We worship Hollywood. We worship sports stars. And now we seem to worship reality stars. So it wouldn't shock me if you had Trump run. I seriously doubt he's going to run, though. But if he does run and get elected, it probably would be simply because he happens to be a quote-unquote reality star.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like more people watch The Apprentice than watch the elections.
Well, more people vote in American Idol than actually vote, and that costs, 99 cents a minute to vote.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding.
Oh, because American Idol just hurts me in my brain places. Yeah.
Most reality shows do that to me.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. People are probably being conditioned. This is just pure speculation on my part. To accept a reality show as something that's actually akin to reality, something might happen to them, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's just, it's all just a bunch of entertainment nonetheless, with less budget, basically.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
it requires
a lot,
your money.
Yeah, Benny, it's a lot cheaper than making an actual sitcom or a drama or a sci-fi series. Plus, it's another way to get people acclimated to the idea of, hey, it's cool to have cameras everywhere, because being in front of a camera means you're famous. And if you're famous, you get to be a celebrity. And if you're a celebrity, you get to be adored and loved and sought after by the masses. So right there is, you know, a perfect example of this programming they have to get us wanting Big Brother everywhere.
Well, you know, and it also makes them want to go outside for their love and everything. They don't realize that if they got love in their heart and everything like that on the inside, then they're perfectly secure. They don't need to be a celebritas. They don't need to have all these billions of adoring fans or whatever, you know. Nobody really needs that. all you really need to be is just happy with the people that you associate with.
That's true.
You know, simple things, okay? Simple things that work is what our society should be based on, I think. If we want to go and overcomplicate things or whatever, it just means that you have to be a lot more educated in order to understand that a problem's emerging. If everything's relatively simple, and it's like, hey, that thing ain't working right, we've got to change it right about now, I don't think that we'd have too many problems with all these corrupt politicians anymore. It's like... almost as if we'd have some description of credible media, for instance, to point the spotlight onto evil, redundant slime bags.
Yeah, but at the same time, Vinny, it does come down to individual responsibility, and we have to become more responsible for ourselves and our own actions, and stop being so apathetic when it comes to how our local state and federal governments are ran, because that's the problem. Once people go to the election booths, no matter what country you live in, and vote, then they just wash their hands of the whole thing, and they don't hold our elected officials' feet to the fire.
Well, you know, and it's only through the absence of being exposed for doing naughty things, that naughty things continue. One would believe, of course, that I think maybe here's another section. You know how we were talking last segment about getting rid of lobbyists and the criminals and what was the other one? Parties.
Central banking.
Yeah, central banking. And we also need to get rid of the current media. You know, that needs to be put on hold as well. The problem is it's a private corporation. You wouldn't want to really terribly intervene it because, you know, we're the public, we don't technically own it. But I say that a lot of the major corporate banks around the world and the media have been responsible for a heck of a lot of destitute policies and have deliberately worked to finance, conceal, and undergo operations against the people of this world. And therefore, justifiably, their assets should be seized and given to the people.
I definitely agree that there should be repercussions for what so many of these corporate bigwigs have been responsible for, such as the BP oil spill disaster a year ago. Hayward's not in jail. None of these scumbags from BP have been punished in any way.
BP hasn't been seized. You know, like the damage to the U.S. economy is greater than the worth of that of the BP corporation. Mm-hmm. And I think at the very moment that accident happened and it was known that they were allowed to happen and it was very preventable, BP should have been seized by the U.S. government. Okay? Just like that. All right? You've done more damage than you can ever pay back. Okay, we now own you, and we are going to give our people very, very cheap gas as a result, with subsidized gas prices. Wouldn't that be fabulous? Because those oil prices are really, really kicking in now, aren't they? But I bet that if somebody got in charge of it as a branch of the government, it'd just be run like an evil corporation or wind up getting privatized to one of the other major oil companies that haven't destroyed the whole Gulf Coast yet.
Well, the reality, Vinny, is that what we saw happen with the oil apocalypse is exactly how our government and how so many other governments are actually ran. Our Navy wasn't in charge in the Gulf of Mexico. The Coast Guard wasn't in charge. The president or the federal government, they weren't running the show. It was BP that was calling the shots after the disaster. They're the ones who did everything. They're the ones who was controlling the media, telling them you can't film on the beaches, you can't do this, you can't do that. They're the ones who were putting the Corexit, dumping it by the millions of gallons into the Gulf of Mexico while the EPA was telling them to stop. They ignored the EPA. So what good is the EPA if no one's going to listen to them? So right there, that shows you exactly who runs the show. The corporatist elites like big oil, big energy, the military-industrial complex, the banks, you get the idea.
They've captured our government. They own it. And they think they can do whatever they want with us.
Yeah,
that's basically it. We are ruled by corporations now, they've been in charge for quite some time, but only now can we see from that Gulf of Oil Kano oil apocalypse incident that it's really real. It's out in the open now.
Yeah, it is.
It's open dictatorship by corporations. You know, I would never live to think I saw the day. But here it is. It's freaking annoying, man.
It is, because the corporations have the money. They have billions and trillions of dollars. They go into these people running for office in the U.S., the U.K., New Zealand, Australia, all over the place, and they fill the coffers, the war chests of these elected officials. Once they get elected to office, well, guess who they're going to answer to? The people or the corporate entities that funded their campaign?
Yeah. It's like, hey, do you go and protect cigarettes for money? No. Just as I'm sure campaign contributions don't influence what bills you vote on either, sir. It works like this. They've got unlimited money that they can print out of frickin' thin air, and therefore unlimited bribing potential. And considering virtually every man has a price, pretty much everybody's going to wind up getting bribed. And pay off, you know, to support and co-sponsor whatever bill, whatever new draft resolution that's been passed down from the UN or goodness knows what else. In New Zealand, we've just got a full-scale takeover of everything. They just passed through in a single day a law that allows them to shut off your internet for a full 6 months if you so much as watch a pirated video on YouTube. That applies to everyone. So if anybody comes onto your computer and then watches a pirated video on YouTube or anything, anywhere, you can shut down your internet for 6 months. With zero recourse.
I mean, that sounds like a police state to me, Vinny. And look what happened in Australia. They banned Mortal Kombat, a video game, from coming into their country with the threat of jail time and, what, a $100,000 fine.
That's pretty rough, man.
For a video game.
That's
the kind of governments we have here in all these countries. Police state and the nanny state in full force.
Yeah, totally. It's like the reason Scarface didn't get shot in Cuba. Because they would tell us where to go, tell us what to do, everything you go. You know, it's not a happy society that forces people to escape from it. And now people are sitting back and watching it come in their front door. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest has been James Burns from freedomfiles.us. Thanks very much for coming on, buddy.
Thanks, Vinnie.
We'll be right back.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Very much so.
Writers and critics who prophesize.
Well, it all days are days of darkness when you're in the news business, because there's no business like show business, and there's no news like bad news. Bad news is basically like the number one resource of public consumption. Everybody loves it, can't hear enough about it, and certainly, for some reason, ironically enough, they will stay completely away from any actual bad news. In New Zealand on television, we are talking about some description of royal wedding, perhaps a little bit of kerfuffle over some description of Prime Sinister doing something silly, but nothing serious. And meanwhile, we have sections of the world that are fast becoming dead zones. An economic crisis of epic proportion. A monstrous, monolithic entity of disgusting proportions seizing control of everybody's assets and introducing legislation to take away people's freedoms, rights, and any description of due process. So, that's the real bad news. And your choice is just the bad news about, so terrible. A couple of flood victims, couple of storm victims. Perhaps there's a new cure for cancer now that will never get on the market. Of course, after we tell you, it's going to take like 5 years of trials before it would get on the market, but then we never hear about it going on the market anyway. So any kind of faint glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel winds up never coming to fruition. And the news just serves as just this endless frustration of reasons to be upset, reasons to stop caring, reasons to be some description of retarded slump. Acknowledge nothing. Ignore everything. Become completely apathetic. Don't bother voting. Don't try to subvert the voting process. Don't stand up in public meetings and call the people a liar. If you have very little involvement in your community, you will wind up having very little involvement in how it is run. Fairly simple. If you want something done right, you got to do it yourself. And I was considering, of course, that dangers involved with sticking your neck out, as it were, and this is what people say, that, you know, oh, it's dangerous, it's not good, it's scary. You know, I don't want to criticize the government openly. Why not? What have you honestly got to lose that they ain't just going to take from you anyway? You know? That is the question that people need to ask yourselves. What have you got to lose when they're just going to take it from you anyway? The answer is nothing. There's nothing the government won't take from you. Nothing these corporatists who've manufactured their control of the government through lobbyists and varying degrees of influence. Why are we surprised? Eh? This is not news. This is something that everybody should know about and has been known for quite some time. There have been people as early back as the 40s and 50s warning us about this kind of takeover happening. And now it is happening. It's happening very, very quickly. One might be deeply concerned at the speed at which our governments are being subverted. My thought is that it's not so much speed that's happening right now, it's more like just activation of other elements that we haven't seen before. For example, I wouldn't have thought that the government could just pass censorship laws in terms of regulating the internet and be able to shut your computer off for 6 months with virtually no evidence. It's technologically impossible to maintain, according to some people. Whereas I think, you know, if they wanted to, sure, they could get some massive supercomputers in here to track and trace everybody's little internet traffic-y go-y bits. And then as soon as they get sent a link to one little video or something, and they click on the wrong one, boom, There goes your income for many people. There goes, well, goodness knows. Goodness knows. It's not fun to watch this happen. You know, I thought I was going to grow up in some description of really nice society where I'd be able to go out and earn an honest living and vote for who I wanted, and my country would be run relatively smoothly and everything would be kept nice and cheap. How wrong I was.
Reach within you and find the means by which to gain your freedom. Fight with tools. Your fate and that of everyone you know depends on it.
Women and children, front line, log on, tune in, stand and be counted. Wounded stationed in the belly of the vulture. Watch your back, there's no civilians. Women, children, front line, listen. Consider this a distant early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution gathering dust particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation too fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Our very special Kiwi collaborator for today, man, I say special quite a lot, don't I? It's because everybody is special. And her name is Evelyn Gilbert from Aotearoa, A Wider Perspective. She's also a contributor to GorillaMedia.co.nz, and she joins us now via Skype. Evelyn, are you there? Oh, unfortunately, she's been dropped. Could we reconnect her, please? How terribly embarrassing. And what we're going to discuss here is one of those things to do with the financial crisis, of course, derivatives. You don't know what a derivative is? Well, here's what it is. It's when you call $1, $40, and you gamble it on the stock market at 1,000 to 1. Basically, you're just making money and astronomical amounts of debt out of thin air. And that debt still exists, even though the original value of whatever this ridiculous derivative commodity is doesn't friggin' exist. There's not enough wealth in all the world to pay back the debt. Okay? We're all in debt to international banks to such frickin' huge degrees that it's a wonder any government isn't an open corporate dictatorship already. They frickin' own us. It's very scary. Because they also own our politicians. You'll find invariably, if you look at who's in your cabinet, that many of them will have ties to international banks, which are all tied together, conveniently enough, in a neat little package with a wee bow. Yes. Served up on a nice cushion of lies in a fabulous $3,000 suit. Yep, that's what I see when I'm watching election coverage. I see some very expensive suits, some very expensive campaigning, but that's all there is. There's no real heart to these people. A lot of them, at least. There's a few people there who are actually there because they give a flying F. And they work out some more quickly than others, but they can't actually get the right thing done in government. The system just won't allow it. The way everybody has to make deals with each other and approach consensus and all of that, it ensures that the one corrupt person in the room is going to be the one who gets their way eventually anyway. Because if you can't agree on everything, then obviously you have to take the minority viewpoint. You know, all goodness knows what. This is my speculation, of course. I just have a distinct lack of confidence in the government's ability to rectify its own problems, let alone the country's problems. And Evelyn Gilbert now joins me. We're going to be going off to break momentarily, so we'll come up to you soon. Okay, love. Sorry about that. All right. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
Unity means solidarity.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, joined by my very special guest, Evelyn Gilbert, right here, right now. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Vinnie.
Okay. Get it. Take us in deep. Derivatives. How deep are we?
Right. Well, we're terribly up shit. Dot, dot, dot.
You're not allowed to say those words on international radio, FCC regulations. We could be like dropped off air for that. But continue onwards.
Okay. Let me tell you what derivatives are and are dangerous. Basically, derivatives are bets. They're side bets on whether stocks will go up or down, and they have been illegal for the better part of the last 100 years. And they were only more or less legalized in the late 80s, early 90s.
There was a prohibition against derivatives because they were so dangerous. It's like, they're sort of like the financial equivalent to DDT or Agent Orange. They're just poison for everything.
They're poisonous, they're very corruptive, and they invite bankers, investment bankers, to make really irresponsible bets. What's worse is that they could insure themselves against a bad outcome with what is called default swaps. Which were basically an insurance against if a bet would go bad. So they would win if the bet would go well, and they would win if the bet would go lose, whereas the people who actually bought the products would lose out big time.
So essentially you're like you're giving somebody else's money to the casino, and you get basically they're paying you to take your money to the casino. And if they lose it, you still have to pay them.
You would have somebody else make a trade. It's a bit like a game, a rugby game. You've got two parties involved. They all have financial, you know, interest in it. If one of them wins, they earn loads of money. If the other party wins, they earn loads of money. And you're sitting on the side as a banker saying, I'm going to bet that one party's going to win, but just in case they don't, I'll insure myself against that so I get the money anyway. So you don't even have to earn products. You don't have to put any financial risk in investing in real goods. You're just betting. That's all it is. It's an empty product. It doesn't do anything for society. It's not. It doesn't add to. It just makes money for that very small elite group of bankers that is involved in these products.
Well, and I presume that they took certain measures to ensure that these products became available to them.
Well, they did. And they did so, first of all, they were forbidden after the Big Depression, because that is what caused the first Great Depression. So they said, never more, we will never do that again. There's going to be a law against it. It was called the Glass-Steagall Act, and that separated the commercial banks from the investment banks, and we were never going to go into the derivative trades ever again because it's poisonous. But in the 80s...
Well, so you're saying that this is derivatives have happened before? When did they last happen before Glass-Steagall was repealed?
No, before the Glass-Steagall was, well, the Glass-Steagall Act was repealed in the late 90s, but it was...
Why did it exist in the first place? Had people traded derivatives at one point in history and it had made a real mess?
Yes, they traded in derivatives in the run-up to the Great Depression. It was, in fact, the cause of the Great Depression.
Why does that not surprise me?
Well, that was they did so in shops called bucket shops. They were basically betting shops, it was just a big betting game. So, with the Glass-Steagall Act, they thought, well, that's behind us; that will never happen again. And in the middle 80s, when Alan Greenspan became the chair of the Federal Reserve in New York, they started lobbying again to make derivatives legal. And what is so interesting is that in the second half of the 80s, people started to actually trade in derivatives, even though they were sort of still illegal, semi-legal, a very shady time, and most bankers didn't want to trade in them because of what happened in the Great Depression, and they were just sort of, they didn't want to be tainted with them. Except
the major banks. I think we've lost Evelyn there again. We're going to have to reconnect her via phone. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. But essentially, what I'm taking on here is that the whole idea of the Glass-Steagall Act, was to stop people from trading in toxic derivatives, which caused the biggest depression in mankind's history. And so they repealed it, and now we're going to have the biggest depression in mankind's history. I think that they're linked. The corruption couldn't be clearer if you pointed it out with a stick. There is no freaking possibility. They didn't know what was going to happen. And they're doing it on purpose. They get to pocket a freaking huge amount of money, which is only part of the plan. The freaking huge amount of money that they've indebted every freaking country with is money they all have to pay interest with. So they all remain very weak, so that they can't challenge them. right? It is an elite group of bankers who have bought off the military-industrial complex. They own all the medicine. They own all the television. You know, they own this world. Every big, gargantuan corporation that exists on the earth today has at some point had to take a bank loan. Pretty sure of it. In order to open up new stores and whatnot, in order to expand. Everybody's in the pockets of the banks. And we have Evelyn Gilbert joining us now. Evelyn, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, speaking of everybody being in the pocket of the banks, exactly how deep is that pocket? How much debt has been created? How big a depression are we looking at here?
We're basically looking at a depression that will collapse at least the entire Western world. And I don't mean a little bit, but fairly completely. But don't ask me for exact numbers, because what I did this morning was concentrate on the derivatives trade with connection to New Zealand. But I'm happy to look it up for you.
Okay. Well, you know, suffice to say, it's a ridiculous amount of problems.
We're talking trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars.
I heard quadrillions.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, how many zeros is that? All right.
I don't know. I think you can hang a dollar on a line all the way to the sun and back.
Holy cow. Mm-hmm. Suffice to say, it's more money than anybody's ever seen.
Yes.
And it's been created, incidentally, by magic. And and they're just going to magically suck the entire world into it, the entire world's economy, like some great black hole in the center of the earth, like on the Star Trek film. It's just, you know, what's the goal of this here? I mean, with the derivatives trading, we know that the Glass-Steagall Act was put there to prevent it, to prevent another depression. And we know that the bankers love getting everybody in debt because they, you know, well, they get to usurp more control over a country, I guess. If somebody owes you, you've got control over them. It's as simple as that. And they're trying to set up a world government. Best way to set up a world government is to make up a whole bunch of money and get people in debt to you for no good reason. That's what I think. I
think that's true.
All right. I was hoping I wasn't right on that one. Oh, well. And how do derivatives actually tie into this, though Evelyn? I mean, do you understand its link in the chain?
I'm sorry, my line is just so bad. I find it very hard to hear you.
Okay. Do you see that there is a link in the chain here with the derivatives? I mean, we can hear you just fine. I'd love you to just sort of divulge, you know, how you think derivatives are connected with all these banks and what you think their agenda is.
Well, derivatives is basically bubble building. It is, if you build bubbles, if you expand the money supply, which will cause huge inflation if the bubble collapses, and prices will just go up and up and up. You basically rob people of their income, and you cause prices to go up to a level, a Weimar Republic level, which will cause extreme poverty and enslavement of the population.
Enslavement to what end?
Excuse me?
Well, I mean, like, everybody asks, like, why do they want to enslave us? And why do you think?
I think just because they can. And because that's how they are programmed. I think this is beyond what normal people like you and me think of as being reasonable. They are psychopaths. They do this because they can.
Well, you know, I think that's one thing that really needs to be explored here is the psyche of the psychopath. Because I believe that it's not entirely different from that of a lot of our political representatives, a lot of the heads of our companies. And if you've got the people with inordinate amounts of influence in those positions of power, it's then very possible for them to destroy the society. And this happens all throughout history.
Yes. I think one of the interesting concepts behind a corporation is that the laws that rule corporations is that, of course, it's a unity, an entity without a conscience. It has one job. It's legally obliged to make as much profit as it can for its shareholders, and in order to do so, they have to cut corners. And because they can't, per individual, be held responsible, they can operate with impunity and without any conscience. In that kind of world also, you will find people who are without conscience and who don't have a problem with this concept will float to the top.
Okay, all right. I'd sort of think it like a... have you ever seen those big stacks of champagne glasses? You know how the champagne glasses are stacked in a pyramid and they just pour champagne in the top and it kind of filters down to all the little glasses below?
Yep.
Yeah, that's basically what it seems like to me. You know, the bankers are basically the top glass that just get filled up first with all the money they could ever drink or swallow. And then whatever makes it to the bottom, everybody else gets to lap up the edges.
The difference between a pile of glasses like that is that in the end, all glasses get more or less filled. Whereas in the structure of the global ruling elite, only their glasses get filled, while ours get emptied.
Ours get emptied? Oh, well, in fact, it's more like you've seen it all filled up or whatever, and then you're just watching it in. And rewind, really?
Yeah.
You just watch everything from the bottom get sucked all the way up to the top until there's nothing left but one glass full right at the top. You know, that's what it is. It's just a sucking sound. All of these big trade deals and financial instruments, organizations, mortgages, and all of these people who can make money up out of thin air via your signature. As soon as you put your signature down on a piece of paper, they automatically have a guarantee for like $100,000 to give you for a house. It's like, what? How is somebody's signature worth $100,000? What backed up currency have you got to signify that $100,000 is actually real? Did that wealth even exist before I put down my signature? No, it didn't. And as a result, just by giving me that loan, we've dumped an extra couple of $100K or whatever into the cash supply. This is just one individual, of course. And that devalues everybody else's currency so that their bread goes and becomes more expensive. And then, of course, the bread company will try and hide it by making the loaves a little bit shorter and slicing it a little thinner. It's called food inflation. The food inflation is just a reflection of the monetary inflation. And you'll find out that, hey, if you look around you, everything's going up pretty astronomically fast in price, don't you think? And it's not because the commodities themselves are getting terribly more scarce or expensive. Like oil, for example. Because they're frickin' making up all this money. And they're robbing you of yours. My very special guest is Evelyn Gilbert. And we'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Join us there in the chat room. And we'll be right back after this very short break.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. 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 Congratulations. You made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
Yeah.
But I'm here now. So what you wanna do?
Huh?
How many dudes you really know can flow like this, like this, like this? Let's do it. How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this? Not many, infinity.
How many dudes you know? Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. At the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, and welcome to all you listeners who are tuning in from around the world on the internet streams at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Very much appreciate the aspect of the international community getting involved with Patriot Radio as it is, and American Freedom Radio. People just basically talking about, hey, I don't want my country to be sold down the river by criminal banksters. How about everybody else has that same problem too? Oh, wait! Everybody does. Is the convenient thing about international bankers is that they have international enemies in every country, those being the people of those countries, so we can all unite and destroy them. Or at least that's what I'd like to see accomplished. And I'm not entirely sure if this is her take either, but my very special guest, Evelyn Gilbert, is back from break as well. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me back.
Oh, yeah. We've been having some copious quantities of technical difficulties and misunderstandings and whatnot. But the show must go on. Now, give us your breakdown. The upcoming election season, what are we expected to see?
In what detail would you like it? I expect a huge... influx of foreign PR. I expect that it's going to be a win for national, not because they do the right thing for the country, but because the mainstream media will be basically supporting their side. And I think it's going to be extremely hard for New Zealanders to get an honest choice in what it is they're actually voting for.
Well, who will you be voting for?
Well, I won't be voting for the big parties. I'll probably be voting for someone like Hona Haruira.
Hona Haruira.
Yeah.
I tried to interview Hona Haruira once, and he refused. I wanted to talk about the real reason why he was thrown out of Parliament back in the day, which was he wouldn't support the emissions trading scam, which is another big derivatives bubble blower.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely.
Mm.
And, I'm not saying we don't have huge problems with the environment, but I don't think carbon is one of them.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, it's just the carbon-based life forms that are running the companies that pump fluoride into our water and pump chemtrails into the skies and all of this other kind of stuff to stop global warming. That's the problem.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a shame you wouldn't come on the radio.
Eh?
It's a shame you wouldn't come on.
It's not that he wouldn't come on the radio. Actually, it was in person. Adam Murray. That I went there specifically to go and ask him this questions about the ETS and how dodgy it was to give him plug play that the media wouldn't give him. And, you know, he said, yep. And after milling round and following him and reminding him for about 20 minutes or so, while he said his hellos and everything like that with everyone else, set up my camera outside, and he came out and he says, okay, so what's this interview about? And I said, well, you know, I wanted to talk about the real reason why he actually got thrown out of Parliament. And he's like, nah, and he just walks right away.
All right.
Yeah. Maybe he misunderstood who I was. I've had a bit of a frustration with that ever since, and I'd like to actually interview him, because, you know, behind everybody that ticks me off, there's somebody that's very, very cool. I presume as much anyway.
Yep.
And with with our government.
I would like to get back to the derivatives trade and why it has such a huge influence on what's happening on this country now.
Yeah, you've got the floor.
Well, what is so interesting is that the whole derivatives trade was initiated again in the mid 80s, and basically there was one bank who actually broke open the whole derivatives trade, and was a model for every other bank, including Merrill Lynch, in the years to follow, and that was the Bankers Trust Bank. And the Bankers Trust Bank is the bank that made John Key a big banker. In fact, John Key was involved in one of the first huge derivatives trades after it became more or less legalized, accepted, but it was still considered dodgy. And that was the attack on the New Zealand dollar in 1987. Which he was the trader who helped Andrew Krieger to make an attack on the New Zealand dollar, making $300 million for the Bankers Trust in one afternoon. This was done with a derivatives bet. And what is so interesting is that according to a writer who used to be a derivatives trader and who is now a professor in financial law and legal law, and this is a professor by the name of Frank Partnoy. He wrote a book about the derivatives trade, Infectious Greed, or How the Derivatives Trade Corrupted the Financial Markets, who zooms in on Andrew Krieger as being patient zero, or the first actual big dealer using derivatives to make lots of money in a semi-legal way. That makes, as far as I'm concerned, John Key complicit in what was considered to be a crime for about 80 years in the last centuries.
Well, if our prime minister's a criminal, what are we going to do about it? Because we were talking before the show today, Evelyn, that we wanted to expose John Key to the extent possible and get all this information out about him. I mean, what more has he done that's worthy of showing to the light of day?
Well, I don't know if you can call him a criminal, because for him to be called a criminal, the law that he has broken, he has to have broken a law, and that, of course, was the big thing that happened in the last 20 years of the last century, is that they decriminalized laws that had prevented big depressions to happen in those last 80 years. So I don't know if you can call him a criminal, because that, of course, would be a dangerous way to go if the law that there is no law that he broke. But there are at this moment big hearings in the United States, and there are at this moment a lot of people, and I would hope that this is going to happen in New Zealand as well, who are reconsidering and who are reinvestigating what happened in those last 20 years and what happened as a result of the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, for example, in 1987, which is when you see the mortgage sales going up. That's when the Glass-Steagall Act was actually repealed. But they started trading before the law was repealed. Now, these are things that may be in investigations will come back up. I hope, of course, that derivatives will be criminalized again, and that will mean that people who've traded in them will be looked upon as extremely shady and worthy of being shunned.
Why couldn't the law be passed retroactively?
Well, I'm not a legal specialist, so you shouldn't be asking me that question, but I can say that if the law can be, if that were the case, we live in a very dangerous society because you never know what is legal, when it's legal, or is it going to be illegal again. Of course, you can ask yourself, what is moral? That's another thing, and that's something you can make your own decisions about.
Well, and morality was what originally our laws are supposedly based on in the first place, aren't they? And so what we've done is we've introduced law above morals so that basically you can legislate that being a moralless sellout is perfectly legal.
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. And that, of course, is something that we're all going to have to deal with. And, you know, it's what are you going to be, a moral person, or are you going to follow the law and try to abuse it? What is clear is that Wall Street bankers have used the law and have abused it and have done so at the cost of the world population, basically. And considering the fact that John Key was once upon a time an advisor to the Federal Reserve of New York, in exactly the same time as the Glass-Steagall Act was repealed, I hope will weigh heavy against him.
Well, if that's true, then is it possible that he was in fact instrumental in repealing the Glass-Steagall Act? I mean, that's too big a call, I think, to make. But we could certainly see complicity and involvement to a much greater extent than, say, any other New Zealand citizen.
I would say that he would be very much in the in crowd, knowing what was happening. I think if you understand that Robert Rubin, who was instrumental, who is touted as the most corrupt capitalist in the world, and that is saying something, was part of that same committee together with the direct boss of John Key, who was then, via his boss, invited to sit on that same committee. That is, there is like 8 people who are in that committee. That makes him very much an insider in what was happening at the time in New York in repealing this act. He most certainly knew about what was happening, why it was happening, how it would affect Wall Street, and how much money he would be making. $50 million tells me he was involved.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, where else, what else is he involved in? Because I've seen pictures of him at a Zionist meeting, at a Freemason meeting. I mean, what, other than his financial links, how is he hooked in? What kind of context does he have?
The short answer is I don't know, and I would be very hesitant to speak about this because I like to deal in facts and what I can prove and what. But I do know that, of course, that these people are very much involved in secretive organizations. They're very much involved in keeping what they're doing secret, outside of the public scrutiny. And as a result, I'm sure that John Key must have been involved in these shady, shadowy kinds of group forming.
It's the Shonky shadow.
It is very much a shadowy, and what gets me is if you hear interviews with him and he is being confronted with not telling the truth, it is just how easy it is for him to say, oh, oops, I got caught. Well, here's my next story, and if you don't like it, I've got another one.
Yeah.
He doesn't feel like shame like people like you and me do when we get confronted by either not being honest or by being caught out, or it's part and parcel of his job.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like there's no shame there at all.
None.
And this is the thing, I mean, he should be absolutely ashamed, you know. Even if everything that he's done is completely legal, you know for a fact that he's been basically just endlessly trying to justify it to himself and just go, haha, I made $50 million, I made a lot of money for my company, I did a good job. Doesn't matter if the world's going to go down the gurgler.
Well, let's put it this way. If he came back for the good of New Zealand, What he should have done is say, well, right, let's take back the Reserve Bank. Let's start printing our own credit. Let's get rid of the usurious, the usury system, the paying interest on loans made out of thin air.
But he's only done the opposite. Oh, thank you, John Key, my loving and lightful frickin' Prime Sinister. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Me and Evelyn will be right back after the break.
What is about? There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment of the Vinnie Eastwood Show for another fabulous day. Today, there is supposed to also be a protest against Operation Lime, where police surveilled and raided many, many, many Switched On Gardener stores around New Zealand, and a lot of cannabis growers and users as well. With huge breaches to privacy laws and goodness knows what else, to enforce a law that has no justification morally or lawfully in any humane society anyway. And again, just another symptom of a profoundly sick society. And we've been talking about the sickos that make themselves to the head of this society. And we talk about scum. And people think that scum dwell near the bottom. And I don't think so. I think scum is a very buoyant substance that winds up floating its way inexorably to the top and wind up, of course, becoming one of our prime sinisters, like John Effing Key. Put the key into the lock and burgle your house. Welcome back, Evelyn Gilbert.
Thanks.
Give us
I agree with you. Foam floats to the top, and nowhere does it float to the top more than it did in Wall Street. And they developed this wonderful system, the rotating doors, the evolving door system, that once you're up there, they can put you in little spots on political committees, or like in New Zealand, they can put you in as the prime minister. What's the most amazing thing, you can actually make people believe that they voted for him. That's exactly right.
Well, you know, I can't, everybody who voted for him, though, according to major polls, is going to vote for him again.
It's amazing. I spoke to my neighbours who are hardworking, honest people who work on the land every day, get up at an ungodly hour, and they say, well, we like him because he's a hard-nosed businessman. And if I say, well, your son on the next hill can barely keep his farm together financially because of the financial system collapsing, doesn't that worry you? And doesn't it worry you that the man had a central role at some stage in the financial system? It's like it doesn't compute.
It's like they don't want to know.
That is my estimation at the moment as well. They just don't want to know. And well, if you have a lot of money, that means you worked hard, then that is good.
Well, you know, I think we've got some very, very strong propaganda and conditioning in this country, don't you? To suggest that somebody who's basically responsible in no small way of a massive crisis that we're entering into and are currently experiencing, more to the point.
Well, let's put it this way.
Not only do they not listen to you when you tell them how bad he actually is, but they love him.
Yeah. I mean, if you tell them, he actually was the head of the derivatives trade for Merrill Lynch in Europe the head of the foreign exchange, and a lot of these derivatives are based on finance trading, on the dollar, the yen, and it actually says in interviews that he was talking with pension funds, that he was dealing with pension funds worldwide, and he just. It's very hard for New Zealanders to make that connection, and then they think, well, he came back to New Zealand, therefore he must be having New Zealand's interest at heart. It is very hard. I find it very, very disturbing, this discrepancy between the reality of the situation and the naivety of people in the way they love this guy.
Well, he does have a very nice smile, though.
And he loves helicopters and V8s.
Yeah. But you wouldn't want one to rule your country, you know? Hey, Mr. V8, our country's being invaded. What should we do? Vroom! Okay.
Exactly.
You know, basically, he's just the engine of financial corruption. And, hey... This guy's helped to sink the world like a massive friggin' Titanic into a financial derivative scheme, bubbly, deep, dark, oceany place thingy. So who better to run the country into the ground?
Well, in fact, if he'd had some form of conscience, he could have said, look, guys, I made $50 million. I did it in the most unscrupulous, horrible way possible, but I love my country and I want to save it from the total tar pit that it's sinking in. So here's my solution, which he has. He knows exactly what the solution is to say we're going to print our own money, we're going to not pay the interest to the international banking cartel because it's usurious, it's been deemed a sin from biblical times. Nobody in the Arab world wants to deal with usury and interest, and we're going to do it the right way, because most of the money we pay in tax goes to interest paid to the big international banking cartel.
Yeah, I say we forgive all the debt and throw the bankers out of the house. Thanks, Evelyn,
exactly.
For coming on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been very fabulous. And fire out your website.
My website is Aotearoa, A Wider Perspective. .wordpress.com.
And
the next couple of weeks, I will be posting a lot of earlier research on this blog so people can familiarize themselves with John Key's connection to the international banking cartel.
And you can read Evelyn's articles on guerrillamedia.co.nz. Traveller Ev is her pseudonym. And along the sidebar there, you will see Aotearoa, A Wider Perspective, and you can click on that and go see her blog on WordPress, one of our many fabulous contributors at guerrillamedia.co.nz, getting out the news as it should be done. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, and we'll see you again sometime. We'll be right back.